and welcome to For the Record, our bi-weekly show in which we take one recently released album and discuss it in depth. You can listen to us every other Thursday at 9:30 a.m. San Francisco time on the world's best internet radio station, BFF.fm, or you can subscribe to the podcast at ForTheRecordPodcast, all one word, .com. This week we're talking about the fifth studio album from Vampire Weekend called Only God Was Above Us, and it starts with a song called Ice Cream Piano.
The world was weaponized as soon as it had passed your lips. I'm a gentleman. I refuse to show my gentleness. Fuck around and find out the anchor child decides this every day. The universe will cry out the truth, which is you've got nothing to say.
Weekend's first album with their original lineup, minus one person, Rostam Batmanlij, who I won't try to pronounce his last name correctly. But anyway, their first album with their original lineup in more than a decade, their fifth in total, if you count Father of the Bride, which I choose not to. But, you know, except for Father of the Bride, they're a band that has made consistently great albums. And this is, I think, their best album so far and maybe one of my favorites of the year. It's just really dense.
Yeah, the year is very young still, but no, this is a really impressive record. I have always had warm feeling towards this band, but never really was super into them. Let's put it that way. And I find this first track, you get the cleverness and the sort of, oh, aren't we these cute kind of prep school boys from New York? And yet also you get this frenetic energy and extreme noisiness. And you look at the credits and you notice they brought on Dave Fridman for production. And of course he did the same thing for Sleater Kinney's seventh record, of just blowing it out and making it sound like your stereo is maybe on the fritz in the best possible way.
Yeah, one of the trademarks of their earlier sound is that they never used distortion and all of the production was really clean. And so this is just a very different sound, but it still sounds like Vampire Weekend.
Yeah, the best of both worlds. And that you can... what I love about this song too is it starts off very, very slow, and the noise is just kind of in the background, and it's this kind of world-weary, almost a trudge, where there's this sort of what seems like it's going to be a refrain throughout the song of, you know, you don't want to win this war because you don't want the peace. And that sort of sets the stage, and you think like, oh, that's what the song is going to be. And then we came in right where it suddenly shifts gears, gets really, really fast, and it becomes overwhelmed by, you know, these sort of classical sounding instruments. And honestly, how much of it is synths, real strings, or samples? I don't really know. The credits aren't super detailed. But I think a hallmark of this record is taking that and then overdriving that so much that it almost becomes difficult to tell apart the more kind of rock instrumentation of guitars and these more classical influenced instrumentation, and they blend together and work together. And I think the production really helps that in a way that's very charming, even though we do get some cleaner string sounds as well.
So an interview with Ezra Koenig, he said that the album is a journey from cynicism to optimism. So it starts out with someone being somewhat cynical and nihilistic, and then there's a journey over the course of the record.
Yeah, it's a fantastic, I mean, better than the opposite journey for sure. And when it sounds so cool, noisy, energetic, clever, just amazing. And so, yeah, we continue the journey onto the, I think appropriately for this band, titled Classical.
The temple's gone, but still a single column stands today. That's
taking fading fades, but never really goes away. A staircase up to nothingness inside your DNA. Ooh, that's a bleak sunrise. All true, all kind, and all natural. How the crew with time becomes classical.
This is what music should be in terms of opening up a world and letting me not succumb to what I usually do, where I'm like, oh, this is what the artist intended. And I'm like, no, it's for artist intent. Okay, I can look at their lyrics. There's this basic notion of, okay, this world that collapses and changes and what remains and how, you know, is it going to be the good stuff or the bad stuff? Who knows? But then to have that basic idea in the context of this song, which sonically is mashing so many things together, mm-hmm. of these super overdriven instruments that honestly, I think it's guitar, but it almost sounds like a harpsichord the way it's being played. And then the bass is this upright bass that sounds super warm and organic. And as we're kind of in this, you know, classical, where it feels very classical influence in terms of these string sounds. And then we go into that bridge where it's this interplay between a kind of classical piano sound, but then this super jazzy, improvised, discordant horn sound, and it works all together. And it's this notion of building a new classical. Like I'm just remembering when I was in college, this idea of like, the jazz section on the college radio station was like, oh, it's America's classical music. Uh-huh. And like, yes, we're every day we're building what is the classical for next year in the future.
Yeah, and it's got that jazzy style, like breakbeat drums too. And
amazing.
Yeah, I love the cacophony of sounds on this song. And this is just such a dissonant record, but in a really positive way. Like it's very pop sounding and it's accessible, but there's a lot of discordancy.
Yeah, dissonant and discordant doesn't have to be ugly. Like it's a beautiful record, but you have to be willing to get on its wavelength for sure.
And I think it's reflecting an authorial intent of capturing the idea of living in this very chaotic world that seems like it's on the edge of destruction. And the song itself, you know, the lyrics are about kind of the animal form theory of world history, where, you know, the history is written by the victors, and all of these terrible rulers kind of get their stories rewritten and their statues never get taken down. And so that's what I took away from this song, but it's just got such a great sound to it.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And yeah, it's ambition. It's what, a four and a half minute song, but it contains a universe in it. And that's pretty impressive. They make it seem easy. Mm-hmm. So we go from here to the next song that is a little more, I think, pretty, and it's one catchy of the singles.
Yeah.
And it's called Capricorn.
Surprise. I know you're tired of trying to listen clearly.
that song by saying it was one of the prettiest, and I said it's, to me, it's one of the most discordant, and I think those are both true statements.
Yeah, I really enjoy how this one plays with the tone and how we get the very clean piano notes and these just tiniest hints of kind of noise around the periphery as we go into that second verse that we heard with just the strings, and then there's this little hint of danger kind of lurking around that then comes and overwhelms the verse, or rather the chorus, which is very pretty and yet, yeah, so overwhelmed with screeching. And then the entire bridge is sort of this dialogue between this screechy instrument and then the string section sounding very clean. And they're both there and just kind of coexisting. It's really cool.
I mean, my thesis statement about this album is it's about the beauty in a chaotic world and the anxiety of living in a chaotic world. And I think the instrumentation on all of these songs captures that so well. But this song in particular really, like, everything coalesces into creating that feeling when I listen to it.
Yeah, I mean, you look at that notion of a chaotic world, and of course the album art and a lot of the single art is all from photo shoots from, I guess, like an abandoned subway yard in New York in the 80s, which is when New York was dirty and dangerous, and this is like the dirtiest and most dangerous kind of part of a dirty, dangerous city, and yet this sense of magic and possibility that exists in that.
Yeah, it's worth looking at the cover art, which is taken, it's not photoshopped, it's just taken as is from a photo by Steven Siegel as part of his 1980s Subway Dream series. And it's a subway, like old subway car that's lying on its side. And so someone's standing in a way that makes it look like they're standing on the side of it because the photo's rotated. And then someone's sitting there holding a newspaper, and the headline on the newspaper is "Only God Was Above Us," which is a real headline from a 1983 Aloha Airlines flight that exploded and the roof blew off, and it landed with only one fatality.
Wow.
So I had to go down a Wikipedia rat hole on that.
No, but it's just amazing finding inspiration from that. And yeah, a band that maybe has a reputation for being, we're going to be clever and we're going to be referential. And they're certainly being clever and referential with all of this. And yet it works as art. And I don't feel like I have to know all these references to get it and enjoy it.
Well,
it just
but
works,
I think,
on its own terms.
I think understanding the references, it's a very profound statement from a moment of terror when someone thought they were going to die, because that was a quote from someone on the plane.
Yeah, the sense of danger and wonder and just the miracle of, like, oh my God, we survived. And yeah, I think we go, I don't know that I have a great sort of thematic segue on this, but I think the sound of the record does open up in a lot of different ways. And I'm really glad that apparently their parting with Rostam was amicable, and he actually came back to collaborate on one of the tracks on the record where it kind of travels. I mean, this is a very New York record, but I think this is a pretty California sound, or at least as California sounding as Vampire Weekend gets. It's called The Surfer.
Someone speaking. A force without a face. The ocean's churning. The cables stay in place. In operation, the locals couldn't save. An undercover agent drowned beneath the waves. Outside the confines of a super mini's dome, there's a California king placed directly.
Yeah, the sound on this song is so warm and yet kind of menacing. It's like, it's a very
minor key.
Yeah, very trip hop, and yet with this detuned piano really anchoring it. So it feels both very organic, but also off balance with all of this synthetic layering. And all, again, these sort of painting this picture and just these little glimpses of the surfer with the puka shell necklace sleeping on a California King mattress directly on the floor.
Yeah.
And you just, it's, very economical and doesn't, you know, it's not a story. It's not even a complete picture. It's just sort of this idea that then opens up into possibility. And it's so, I just want to crawl up inside, even though it feels kind of dirty in there.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of the fact that there are these kind of archetypal figures in this that come along in this record. And, you know, this is kind of like a Jesus figure. There's a line about, you know, a Roman soldier's spear stabbing him. I don't remember what the line is, but it's kind of, yeah, it's got some Jesus imagery. And then Mary Boone is also kind of a reverential song about someone with that has like gospel choir backing, and it kind of like inserts these figures throughout, and I don't know how to interpret that, but I like it.
Yeah, well, this entire record for me, it's, you know, we've had about a week to spend with this, mm-hmm. and I think it's a record that will take a lot more than a week to really suss out everything that's going on. I just musically, I could spend, you know, I feel like there's depths here, interesting, you know, musical styles, strange compositional approaches, like very, you know, places where I'm like, wait, was that a bridge? No, that's a verse. And things are kind of blending into each other and very surprising me in the best possible way, and yet all flowing in such a way that you can just let it wash over you, or you can think analytically about the music. You can really try to suss out what a lyric's about, think about the broader themes, let the little bits of words inspire you to go off on some your own journey and then come back and meet the music later. Yeah, I love the different ways that you can interact, like the quintessential re-listenable record, because each time you can approach it a different way.
Yeah. And then we'll go next into another very different song, which is called Gen X Cops.
Welcome back, my oldest friend.
Songs have grown on me as I've listened to them. This was one that didn't really resonate with me on the first listen, and like they each just grow on me and they get more, I see more of the depth and I listen more to the lyrics, and I love that the part of the chorus on this is each generation makes its own apology, which is such a great line.
Well, it's, I think, a nice pairing. You know, I think we heard that song Classical about, which was so sort of engaged with, like, what is it that we leave? How do we, you know, who is it who makes the legacy for the future? And here it's sort of every generation is looking to the one before it. And like, oh, those guys. And so I love that image of the Gen X cops, which could be literal cops. It could also be just the guys at your show telling you you're doing it wrong. And the new generation has to kind of learn from them and then just say, well, that's fine, but we're doing our own thing now. And so, and again, I'm overreading into it, but I just, that sense of this,
and
yeah,
I think
to build the future.
And I think there's also the inverse of that. And, you know, in the first song, there's the lyric, we're all the sons and daughters of vampires who drain the old world's necks. And like recognizing that we are also the descendants of all of these people who did awful things. And our generation is going to do awful things that will reverberate into the future.
Yeah, you're trying to do better, but yeah, you're going to make mistakes. And yeah, it's obviously, Ezra Koenig is very much a kind of, I guess, on the old side millennial. I guess he just turned 40.
He's 40, yeah.
And yeah, awesomely turned 40 on the day of the eclipse, which also was the first day of their tour, which was an outdoor show during the eclipse.
So I like the fact that his vocals on this song are also a little bit distorted and there's some reverb. And you know, in preparing for this podcast, I went back and listened to all of the previous three albums. Again, I will not listen again to Father of the Bride. But listening to that first album that came out at the beginning of 2008, and those first three tracks, which are Mansard Roof, Oxford Comma, and A-Punk, and hearing those songs and remembering where I was and like how striking that sound was, and then staying and listening for the rest, you know, I had to listen to the whole album. And the part of the clean sound was his vocals were so clean and young. And this is now somebody who the vocals of someone who has done a little bit more living and has a little bit more of a longer worldview.
Yeah, I think he's still able to sound, you know, youthful. His voice still has this real warmth to it and cleanliness when he wants it, but this is, he's not choosing to. And for me, you said this was a song that didn't grab you immediately. This song grabbed me immediately. The aggression that it starts with, the charm, that fundamentally open-ended, each generation makes its own apology, is such an amazing lyric that's so evocative. And, you know, everything, yeah, this to me is like what I love about this record, is that it's clever, it's self-aware, it's aggressive and noisy, it's beautiful, it's thought, yeah, it's, yeah, I'm left a little speechless right now.
So speaking of songs that grabbed you right away, the next song grabbed me right away. It's called Mary Boone.
Faded white, knowing time, you weren't having, but I was looking in those days. My working day came in from Jersey, not from Brooklyn. Was it all in vain? We always wanted money, now the money's not the same. In a quiet moment at the theater, I could hear the train. Deep inside the city, your memory remains. Mary Boone, Mary Boone, I'm on the dark side of your room. Mary Boone, Mary Boone, well, I hope you feel like loving someone soon.
Yeah, this song, you talked about it grabbing you. I did really have a warm spot from the first listen, where it has that sweet sound, very kind of clean, with that choir coming in. Mm-hmm. Feels so heavenly. And then popping into that very super produced kind of, again, like that hip-hop-y production with lots of hand claps and woo! And it's so joyful. It's, this song is so warm. And I want to crawl up in it, and it doesn't feel dirty.
Yeah, I think it's worth pointing out that Mary Boone was an influential art gallery owner in New York, especially in the 70s and 80s. And she's still famous for pointing out that during that time, the violence and poverty of New York gave people more time to focus on art. And she later went to jail for tax fraud. So I think this song, it does what great music does, which is convey a feeling and a kind of mental story in a way that you can't quite articulate in words. And I think this song really does that by capturing, you know, kind of feelings about art and commerce and the way that the world has changed since the 70s and 80s and the way that New York has changed. And I just, it's so catchy too. It's got so much going on from an instrumentation perspective too.
Yeah, there's a nostalgia to it, but I still feel like it's looking to the future with a certain sense of optimism.
So the next song we'll play is the penultimate track. It's called Pravda.
Took the family balalaika. The strings would never stay in tune. I hung it up by the piano. I'm leaving at the rising of the moon. I had a job once in Penn Station. Tied a tie shop, go tycoon. Every time I
moon.
I like it that in this almost the last track, we get that intricate guitar line that always is kind of a hallmark of their sound.
Yeah, no, I love that, you know, almost classical, but clearly played on
an electric seems guitar.
Like, yeah, played on an electric guitar. So it's got that oomph to it and yet the intricacy to it. And the entire song starts very quiet with just that guitar line being kind of prominent and everything else very muted. And then over the course of the song, you get backing vocals coming in. And so there's this call and response and increasingly noisy instrumentals because it's basically verse, chorus three times through. And that was the last time through where it's pulling out all the stops. And that's kind of this entire record is, hey, let's take this, what you think of as the Vampire Weekend sound, and then just blow it out and make it as crazy and loud and over the top as we can and see what happens. And what happens is awesome.
Yeah, this record it's 10 tracks. It was really hard to choose which ones to drop because every song is great. And, you know, it's a real, not to come back again to how much I dislike Father of the Bride, but it was just so overstuffed and jammy. And this is like, okay, we've concentrated on really just getting the best tracks and cutting them down to being stuffed with meaning and sound and power. And that's what you get, like all killer, no filler.
Yeah. It's just sort of saying someone might mangle, someone might, but no, it is. Yeah. A heck of a record. And one that I was almost a little skeptical because they're such an established band. And I was like, am I really into this? And yeah, the album, every time I listen to it, I'm like, oh, I'm going to have fun talking about it. And I'm going to talk about it knowing that there's stuff I haven't picked up on yet. It's that kind of record. There's such depths upon depths going on here.
Yeah. And we didn't even really get into the real music nerd stuff part of it, because I assume that's not of interest to everyone. But for example, at the beginning of Prep School Gangsters, there's a riff I think it's an intentional callback to My Best Friend's Girl by The Cars. And it's just, you know, there's all these little Easter eggs in there that you can just listen to and pick up.
Yeah, I mean, Gen X Cops is a Hong Kong movie from the 90s, one I'd never heard of, but why not throw in a reference to that? What the hell?
So what Canning has said about this album is, and this is a direct quote, "I think fatalism taken to its extreme is optimism. Some of the happiest people in the world have some element of surrender and acceptance. There's fatalism. The world is a chaotic place and isn't that terrible? And then there's optimism. The world is a chaotic place and you got to surf that wave." And so I think that's a great way to sum up the attitude of this album and the feeling that I get from it. It's just really great from start to finish. It's not that long. Just listen to the whole thing. And the last song, appropriately enough, is a very long, different sounding song, and it's called Hope. So we'll go out with that. Again, we've been talking about the fifth Vampire Weekend album, Only God Was Above Us, and you've been listening to For the Record. Thanks so much for listening.
Member of the BFF.fm podcast network. Learn more at podcasts.bff.fm.
BFF.fm, best frequencies forever.